Our practice of meditation and mindfulness calls us back to the present moment, invites us to come and be here with what is right in front of us, be in touch with what's inside of us, and also to look deeply, to be aware of the bigger context that we live within in each moment, which means to be touching the miracle and the mystery of what it is to be alive. And when we are practicing truly, each moment we can touch that, we can come back. And when we are really present in our breath, in our body, and we're not busy thinking about what we're going to do next, or what we should say, or how we should be, or regretting what we have said, or what we have done, then we can be truly aware of what's right in front of us. And our weekend together is to practice that over and over again. Because we are habitually trained in our minds to always be seeking the next thing or regretting what went before, it takes practice to remember. When I say remember, it's like to bring our body, our mind, and our breath together so that we really can experience what's right here in this moment, our life as it is in this very second. So when we do sitting meditation, it's important to have a place of focus. So coming back to our breath. And if it's helpful to count your breath, so that you can really come back. And being aware of our bodies and including the sounds around us so that our attention is not narrowly focused, but is focused and includes the whole world. When we listen, we have to truly ask, where is the sound? Is it outside? Is it over there? Or is it inside of us? Where's the distinction? Let go of any distinction and let the sounds be our own song. The sounds of the bell, let them sing through our muscles and bones. The bells sing through vibrations in our body. And in the same way, letting our breath not just be in our lungs, but as it truly is everywhere in our body at once. So when we use the word remember, we use the word to bring all the members of who we are together in this moment. We literally remember ourselves. And in that way we can touch our lives. At Mountain Lamp, at our rural practice center, we've been holding 3-week retreats for a number of years now. And on those 3-week retreats, we usually take up one particular sutra. And I think the thing that has struck me the most in reading the sutras is how optimistic, how positive they are, how much lightness there is in the sutras. And we, in studying them, touch that lightness, touch that optimism. But it also asks us then, where does that optimism come from? Our ancestors clearly were very optimistic. And yet they lived in a world of much suffering. They lived in China, where there was vast poverty, much starvation, a very strict hierarchical system, and not much opportunity to change that system. to break that system. Where you were born is where you lived your whole life. In India, it was even more so. You were born into a particular caste, and that determined your entire life, where you could live, what work you could do, who you could associate with, how you would be treated. And yet out of that world where there was a lot of suffering, these sutras express great optimism. I feel very fortunate in my life that I have always lived very close to the area where I was born and raised. And I've had friends for many, many decades. And sometimes when I get together with friends who I've known for 30, 40 years, and particularly recently, when I've had those gathered with friends in that way, I've been struck with how upset people are, how upset they are about the world, how upset they are about their own particular lives. Recently, I gathered with 6 friends. We've been getting together for 25 years, spending a weekend together. And in that group, 2 people were divorced. One was a widow. One had a daughter who had been sexually abused and had left family, would have no contact at all with any of her family anymore. One of the women spoke frequently about her concern about her carbon footprint, whether it was okay for her to take an airplane. Even though there was a great deal of love among us, there was also a sense of great disturbance, great worry. And yet I didn't personally feel that concern or that worry. I say that not because I think there isn't suffering in the world. Certainly, if we look at the events of last week with the hurricane that struck New York City and the Jersey Shore, I remember in the 1980s when I was working as an ecologist, one of the people I was working with had a specialty in rivers and oceans and had gone to a conference and came back and said, you know, this is what's going to happen. The waters are going to rise, and it's happening already with global climate change. So this was 25 years ago, he was talking like this. In the New York Times this week, articles were, well, this is no surprise. This has been predicted. Of course, this is happening. What I was struck with when I was with my friends was how overwhelmed they were with the negativity, with thoughts of fear, with anger towards people who were causing suffering. People who were not being conscious about how they were consuming. People who were denying that there was climate change happening. So I heard a lot of anger and a lot of fear. And whereas I know we all feel that in looking at the world, still we have the lessons of our ancestors that encourage us in optimism. And there's a reason why they can encourage us in optimism in the face of all sorts of horrors, famine, plague, epidemics. They were faced with the same kind of fears and anger that we are faced with too. This doesn't really get to the core of it, but one thing I am aware of is that there have been other times that humanity has threatened themselves with death or been threatened. Certainly during the plague. And out of that time, when every other person was dying, nobody knew who was next, and horrible deaths, of course the anger and the fear had to be very, very large during that time. Concern with all of humanity being wiped out and not knowing why or what to do about it. And out of that came the Renaissance, the Reformation, a whole new way of thinking, a whole new way of understanding. And what we are doing together during this practice period, but more deeply, more importantly, what we're doing together in our practice of mindfulness and meditation is transforming consciousness. And it has to begin with me. It can't be about what's happening outside of me. It has to begin inside of us. And the way we practice is that when we are aware of negativity, fear, and anger, we come back to ourselves and we restore ourselves in what's right here in front of us. We restore ourselves in the smile of our friends. We restore ourselves in the beauty of the flowers. We remember ourselves in the cool drops of rain. Over and over we come back. And it's not to push away the negative thoughts, but it's to be able to look more deeply into what is essentially true about who we are, about life in general. When we are restored and renewed and remembered, when we feel the joy of a cool breeze on our neck, from that place, our creativity arises. From that place, we respond. Our practice is simply coming back over and over again to touch deeply into the miracle and the mystery of each moment. And we have to be willing to open up beyond the negativity. Because the fact is, right now, we are awash in negativity. It is a hurricane that is blowing us away from what is the foundation, the ground on which we stand. And the practice is to come back to really feel this ground on which we stand in this moment. And it is wonderful. It is wonderful to be in a room with 30 people who are dedicating their lives to practicing the way the Buddha taught for us to find joy, love, and peace. And not only to find it for ourselves, but to manifest it in the world. That stepping forth is absolutely necessary, and that is the act of creativity, the stepping forth. I heard about this wonderful DVD about the Hubble Space Telescope, and I've been really interested in the Hubble Space Telescope. It's doing a lot of things, but one of the things it's doing is looking around the universe, the unimaginable vast universe. in which there are billions of galaxies like our own, and each galaxy is made up of billions of stars, and each star is surrounded by many planets. As far as Hubble is looking, it looks like they've found, oh, maybe 6,347 planets that have the same kind of attributes that this precious jewel that we live on has. You know, there's life out there. And we know there's life out there because life is in love with itself. If you look at a field of asphalt, within 2 years, it's cracked by grasses, buttercups, the most tenacious weeds. Life is always reinventing itself. It can't be destroyed. And we can come to know that essential nature that is who we are. Indestructible. Beyond birth, beyond death. Through our practice of mindfulness and meditation. And it is knowing that essential nature, what is most fundamentally true about each and every one of us, that gave our ancestors that great optimism, that indestructibility, not getting lost in the negativity of their era, but seeing beyond space and time what is most true about each and every one of us, about all life. And that is the core of what we're doing. That is the truth of what we're remembering. What is more true about our existence than our individual, separate self? Well, so I got that DVD about the Hubble Space Telescope, and I watched it last night, and I went, oh no, we gotta see this. I gotta show it to everybody. But we already have one DVD. And that's our teacher, Tai, talking. And we all really want to see that. So can we really show two DVDs? So I asked a few people, they said, sure. That's what I hoped they'd say. On Sunday, we'll get to see that, that absolutely amazing DVD on, about the Hubble Space Telescope, and not only about the universe and what we're able to see, the most unbelievable things, but also about us as humans having created that. And it takes many, many, many people to have created that possibility for us to be looking in that way. Wonderful, amazing ingenuity. And it's not about somebody else. It's not about them doing it, it's about us doing it. Every breath we take, where we come back, and we breathe in, we breathe out, and we welcome ourselves into the moment. Allows for that great, vast, unknowable mind to arise in the world. And we know that mind whenever we touch love within our hearts. That is life being in love with itself. And we know that love is the creative force that everything arises from, the creative energy. And it's not just love as passion, but it's something deep and abiding and illuminated is the energy of all existence. So we come back not to change things, not to make ourselves different, but to realize what is the truth about who we are. And in that realizing, then manifest that in the world. I feel such gratitude when I am in a room with people who are practicing. I don't know that we will be able to turn around what has come into existence now. I don't know that we'll be able to fix the world. But I do know that the energy behind everything is love. The fundamental, the essential, the absolute. All the religions tell us this. In Christianity, they say God is love. And God is unknowable. And yet, in each moment when we really touch that welcoming, open-hearted acceptance of things just as they are, of each other just as we are, of ourselves just as we are, we remember ourselves in this moment. And we turn our mind to compassion, to acceptance, to a willingness to be here. Then we are manifesting that absolute energy. We are manifesting the unknowable. And it's unknowable because we can't create it. We are created of it. We are created from it. We are the expression of it. So we don't have to try really hard. We just need to let go and come back. We don't have to make it different than it is, or ourselves different than we are. We just need to remember and come back. So we have a whole weekend to practice together our remembering, our touching into the miracle and the mystery of each unfolding moment, and expressing that then in our activity, in our connection with each other, and particularly in our connection with ourselves. When we are sitting in meditation and we come back and we touch the miracle of being alive, you know, if our mind is really distracted and we're running here and we're running there, it's impossible to touch that because it only lives in this moment, just as we only live in this moment. So we devote our whole energy to really being here. This breath is the whole of our life, and we don't want to miss it. This step, touching this earth, touching it with love, even though we can't understand how or why, heals ourselves and the earth at the same time. Part of our practice period is that we've learned a new song of mindfulness, and there's going to be time where we, this retreat, where we sing all the new songs we've learned, and maybe some that we haven't learned yet. But the song for this retreat is the Discourse on Love. It's been put to a very beautiful melody by some of the nuns at Plum Village.
Mindfulness of love in our own heart. This is the noblest way of living. Free from wrong views, greed, and sensual desires. Living in beauty and realizing perfect understanding. Those who practice boundless love will certainly transcend birth and death. Etena satchavacena sodite ho tu sabada. Etena satchavacena sodite ho tu sabada. Etena satchavacena sodite ho tu sabada.